Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really pivotal case in the struggle against racial segregation, Monk v. City of Birmingham from 1949.
Yeah.
We've got a really interesting collection of sources for this course. Some podcast guidance aimed at law students, a detailed case brief, and also a standard legal brief. Our goal today is to, you know, distill the most crucial insights from these materials and really understand how this specific case challenged the deeply entrenched practice of racial zoning.
Absolutely. And to really grasp the significance of Monkey, you really have to understand the historical context. We're talking about the Jim Crow South, right?
Right.
Where racial segregation permeated, well, pretty much every aspect of life. Zoning laws, unfortunately, became yet another tool to enforce this segregation, effectively creating these white-only neighborhoods. It paints a pretty stark picture of the legal landscape back then.
It really does. And this wasn't the first time the courts had, you know, grappled with this issue. Way back in 1917, the Supreme Court in Buchanan v. Worley had actually struck down similar racial zoning in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Precedent.
Exactly. So the legal battle against this kind of segregation had already begun. What we want to explore today is how the Monk case kind of built upon that earlier ruling and, you know, what its lasting impact has been on constitutional law and the fight for civil rights.
Okay, let's get into the specifics of the Monk case itself. At its heart is Mary Monk, an African-American resident of Birmingham. She owned property and simply wanted to build a home for her family. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? An exercise of property rights.
Seems simple enough.
But the city of Birmingham had other plans.
Indeed, they did. Birmingham had these very explicit ordinances in place, sections 1604 and 1605 of their General City Code from 1944, along with something called Ordinance Number 709-F.
Yeah.
And these weren't ambiguous at all. They directly restricted how property could be used based entirely on the owner's race, specifically designating certain residential areas just for white occupancy.
And what's so telling, I think, is how this directly affected Mary Monk. Her building plans actually met all the standard requirements, like they were approved from a building code perspective.
Right, checked all the boxes.
But then her permit was denied outright. And the sole reason given was that her property was located in one of these so-called white zoned areas and she was African American. It really just underscores the overt nature of this discriminatory practice.
It truly does. And the stakes were incredibly high here, as our sources highlight. Monk and, you know, other African Americans faced a very real threat of criminal prosecution, hefty fines, even jail time.
Just for living in their own homes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Simply for trying to live in homes that violated these racial zoning laws. It really brings home just how severely these ordinances impacted people's lives and, well, their fundamental rights.
So this sets the stage for the crucial legal challenge. The central question before the court was, were these race-based zoning laws constitutional? More specifically, did they violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment? And, you know, tied to that, there were also serious considerations about whether these ordinances infringed upon fundamental property rights.
And as we see in the legal briefs, the court relied pretty heavily on existing legal precedent. That Buchanan v. Worley case we mentioned earlier was absolutely key.
Yeah, vital.
As was another similar case, Harmon v. Tyler. These earlier decisions had really established the kind of bedrock principle that race just cannot be the deciding factor in who can own or occupy property.
Exactly. Those earlier rulings essentially affirmed that racial zoning interfered with the fundamental right to acquire, use, and dispose of property. Now, the city of Birmingham, in defending its discriminatory ordinances, tried to draw an analogy to the separate but equal doctrine.
Ah, Plessy.
Right, from Plessy v. Ferguson. It's a classic example, I think, of trying to apply a legal principle to a situation it really wasn't designed for.
Okay, yeah, let's dig into that a bit more. Plessy, of course, dealt with segregation in public facilities, famously upholding that whole idea of separate but equal. So how did the court in Monk effectively distinguish its situation from the precedent set in Plessy?
Well, the crucial distinction the court made was between the realm of public facilities like trains or schools and the fundamental rights associated with private property. They basically argued that the logic of separate but equal, even if you accepted its, you know, flawed premise in the context of public spaces.
Which is a big if.
Right, a huge if. Even then, it simply had no bearing on the ownership and use of land. Furthermore, they reasoned that racial zoning violated the Due Process Clause by fundamentally restricting who could own and live where. It wasn't about providing separate but equal housing. It was about outright exclusion.
Exclusion from entire residential areas based solely on race.
Precisely.
That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. It really gets to the core of what property ownership actually means. And the court went even further, didn't it? Arguing that racial zoning wasn't even a legitimate exercise of the city's police power.
Exactly.
Now, just for anyone unfamiliar, police power refers to that inherent authority of a state or local government to enact laws, regulations, you know, to promote public health, safety, morals, general welfare. So how did the court say racial zoning fell outside of this legitimate power?
The court recognized that while maintaining public peace might be a legitimate aim under police power, it simply could not be used as a justification for trampling upon fundamental constitutional rights.
Right. The ends don't justify the means here.
Not when the means are unconstitutional. They explicitly stated this, and there's a really powerful quote that captures this perfectly. Desirable as public peace is, it cannot be accomplished by laws that deny constitutional rights.
Wow.
This really gets to the heart of the matter. You can't just invoke the idea of social order to justify discriminatory laws that violate basic constitutional protections.
And the court's understanding of property rights in this case was also quite significant, wasn't it? It wasn't just about, like, the piece of paper saying you own the land.
Precisely. The court articulated a much broader understanding of property rights. One of the quotes from our sources really emphasizes this. Property is more than the mere thing which a person owns. It includes the right to acquire, use, and dispose of it.
Use and disposal, okay.
So it wasn't enough for Mary Monk to legally own the land. These zoning laws were infringing on her fundamental right to use that land to enjoy it as her home, simply because of her race. This recognition of property rights encompassing not just ownership, but also the ability to live and enjoy one's property without discriminatory barriers, that's a key insight from the Monk case.
That makes sense.
And another powerful quote really drives this home. Zoning ordinances cannot deny the civil right of a colored person to dispose of property to a white person. It highlights that these laws restricted not just who could live in a place, but also who you could even sell to based purely on race.
Right, affected transactions too. So after considering all of these arguments and precedents, what was the ultimate decision, the holding, in Monk v. City of Birmingham?
Well, the court unequivocally declared the Birmingham zoning ordinances unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment, a clear and decisive victory against this legally sanctioned form of racial segregation in housing.
And the impact of this ruling, mm-hmm. It extended far beyond just the city limits of Birmingham, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It served to reinforce the authority of federal courts to intervene and, you know, strike down discriminatory local laws that violated fundamental constitutional rights. It sent a really powerful message that these kinds of explicit racial classifications in housing just would not stand up to legal scrutiny. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the broader trajectory of civil rights law, Monk really laid some important groundwork for later landmark victories, such as Shelley v. Kramer.
Which dealt with restrictive covenants.
Exactly, racially restrictive covenants. And eventually it paved the way toward the Fair Housing Act. It's a really crucial link in that chain of legal challenges against segregation.
The podcast guidance for law students that we looked at also points out some really critical nuances that are probably worth highlighting. It emphasizes that inherent tension between a city's legitimate use of its police power and the protection of fundamental constitutional rights.
Right. That conflict.
The expanded understanding of what property rights truly encompass beyond just legal title, and importantly, the assertion of federal authority over discriminatory state and local policies.
Those are absolutely key takeaways. The Monk case wasn't just about saying, oh, racial zoning is morally wrong, though it certainly is. It was about firmly grounding that wrongfulness in core constitutional principles.
Anchoring it in the law.
Precisely. The court essentially affirmed that the 14th Amendment places significant limitations on the powers of states and cities, even when those powers are being exercised, you know, under the guise of promoting public welfare. And the right to own and use property free from racial discrimination is clearly within those protected areas.
It's also important to remember, as our guidance reminds us, that while Monk was a crucial victory against segregation, it's distinct from later school desegregation cases like Brown v. Board of Education.
Different context. Yeah.
Although both were, of course, pivotal in dismantling Jim Crow. And while the Supreme Court had previously upheld the general concept of zoning, Euclid v. Ambler Monk, made it crystal clear that zoning based explicitly on race is a fundamentally different and unconstitutional practice.
A critical distinction.
And the fact that the legal remedy in Monk was an injunction against the enforcement of these ordinances, largely because of that threat of criminal penalties, also underscores the seriousness of the infringement on individual liberty.
Absolutely. The very real threat of fines and imprisonment for simply living in a home one owned solely because of their race, it just underscores the urgency and the fundamental rights that were really at stake in this landmark case.
So to kind of bring it all together, Monkey's City of Birmingham stands as a truly pivotal moment in the dismantling of legally sanctioned racial segregation in housing. By decisively declaring Birmingham's racial zoning ordinances unconstitutional, the Supreme Court firmly affirmed that such laws were a clear violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
And it achieved this by reinforcing that essential principle that property rights extend beyond mere ownership to include the fundamental right to acquire, use, and enjoy that property without facing discrimination based on race. The case serves as a powerful reminder, I think, of the role of federal courts in safeguarding constitutional rights against discriminatory local policies. And it represents a significant step forward in the long and ongoing struggle for a more just and equitable society.
It really makes you think, doesn't it, about the enduring relevance of this case? I mean, while overt racial zoning like that is now thankfully a thing of the past, are there perhaps more subtle ways, seemingly neutral laws or policies today, that might still have discriminatory impacts on housing access and opportunity?
A crucial question.
And how do the fundamental principles established in cases like Monk continue to inform our contemporary debates about housing, equality, and the ever-evolving understanding of property rights and equal protection, especially in the face of new challenges? It's definitely something to keep in mind as we continue to grapple with these complex issues.
Food for thought, definitely.
Well, thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.